everything food, everything you would imagine.
My passion and love is street food.
Malaysia was a big change in my food culture.
This is actually the reason I started my account.
NoGarlicOnions.com and Bedouin Foodie. Welcome to a new episode of Food Unscripted. So the idea was very simple. Food unscripted, unprepared and the way it is. We're going to start by introducing the show, what we're going to be talking about, and definitely who are you. Welcome to another show of Food Unscripted, a podcast, a show, a discussion, call it whatever you want. And we planned Hani and I, Bedouin Foodie, to discuss about everything food, everything you would imagine, unanswered questions, unscripted. Why unscripted? Because there is nothing prepared and no notes. So it's going to be an open discussion for a couple minutes, and we'll talk about it in a bit, about everything food, travel, experiences, countries, last restaurants visited, unanswered questions, and lots of things you would definitely would want to know about. So first, we're going to start by the guidelines and where it is. 38 minutes. So I asked Hani, what is your favorite number? He said, something with the eights. I said, fine, mine is something with a three. So this show is going to be a fixed 38 minutes, unopened. At the 38, we close and we continue in a different show. It's going to be one show every week about everything food, and the ideas are endless. And let's start by one, definitely, on that YouTube channel, on our No Garlic Onions YouTube channel, introducing Hani Malki. Hani, Bedouin Foodie, tell me a little bit about you, your start, who you are, where you're from, and all the details.
All right. Well, first, I just want to say thank you for inviting me to co-host this podcast with you. I was born in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, in the 1960s. I'm not going to tell you my real age, I'll just say in the 1960s. And being from that part of the world, we're all mixed. Our families are all mixed bloods. My mother is Syrian, Palestinian. And I did a DNA test, and I found that my DNA is all mixed. For Arabian Peninsula, Syrian, Palestinian, even Turkish. I grew up in Jeddah, and then I went to boarding school in England, and then I went to university in the States. And I've lived all over the world. From the Far East, from Singapore and Indonesia, I lived, all the way to Miami, Los Angeles, and New York.
So when you say lived, is lived?
Actually lived.
Not weeks?
No, lived. What I did is I was able to leave my family business at the age of 36, and I went off on my own, and I moved to the Far East. I moved to Indonesia, and then I moved to Singapore. And I spent a lot of time doing real estate development and traveling and learning about cultures and foods and just feeding my curiosity about the world. And I was fortunate enough to be able to do that, to move around.
When did you discover your love for food?
I've always had it. My father was a major foodie, and I was exposed to street foods and Michelin-starred restaurants and home cooking since birth, really. So as far back as I remember, I've had that. I was the youngest. I was living at home. My brother and sister were in boarding school in Lebanon, actually, Brumana High School. But I was too young, and then the political situation didn't allow me to go there. So I was living in Saudi with my parents. And my father's business, a lot of it was in Paris, in perfumes and cosmetics. So they would take me with them on business trips. And we would get invited to Michelin star restaurants. So my first Michelin star restaurant is called La Serre. It's a restaurant in Paris, and I was 9 years old, I think. So it's in me. My passion and love is street foods. A lot of the stuff that you cover in your videos, I love. All the gems, all the hidden gems, all these artisans and people who do these things with their hands. And this is my real passion, but I have a lot of respect for food, be it from street level to three-star Michelin level.
One important thing we didn't cover and didn't talk about yet is why did we decide to talk in English? You do speak Arabic, you
yes.
do understand Arabic, but you both decided that English would be a better language for both of us and to connect with the world.
Yeah. We really wanted to share our story, our travels, our knowledge with a broader audience. So we agreed on English, although my Arabic is not as good as yours. And it's a mix of Syrian, Palestinian, and Saudi.
Wow.
So it'll come out in the podcast, I'm sure.
So tell me about your travels in a bit. So you lived in those countries.
Yeah.
And going in, would you go eat local food, hummus, the food you like, or the food they serve. So how did you discover your passion for food, and how did you adapt or learn from the places you lived in?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question, because it's always about the local food for me. When I moved to Singapore, I really went deep into learning about Chinese cuisine and the regional different Chinese cuisines. So I started learning about the three cuisines there. Similarly, in Indonesia, when I was living in Indonesia, Indonesia is a destination where you're primarily going to eat Indonesian food. So again, it's 10,000 islands, different cultures, different cuisines, different everything. So I spent learning that. American cuisine, we all know it. It's very popular, fast food, so on and so forth. But again, when I was living in New York, I spent time getting to know New York really well. And it's one of the greatest food cities in the world. So to answer your question, it's always about the local for me.
Would you feel from time to time that you would need to come back to the roots, and sometimes you would crave something
Yes.
that we call comfort food?
Absolutely. Again, great question. And it reminds me of when I was at Boston University, where I was in BU. And at the time, there were no really Arabic restaurants or anything. So whenever I had a craving for home-cooked food, I would go to an Indian restaurant and order biryani, which is the closest thing to having rizzu lahm, like we have in Saudi. Mm-hmm. So I always crave it, but I'm able to get my fix when I need it anywhere in the world. So even Tokyo has hummus and shawarma.
You love hummus, huh? We, yeah. In every single discussion we have, there is hummus that comes in.
I love hummus. Hummus represents so much. We can have multiple episodes about hummus. Everybody loves hummus. It's a uniter. It's also a source of debate, who owns hummus and everything. And I asked you, I said, can we have an episode about who owns hummus and cultural appropriation and about food? And so I think I'm looking forward to that one.
Coming soon.
Yeah.
Malaysia was a big change in my food culture. So I've been to Malaysia, which I've always heard that the slogan of Malaysia would be Malaysia truly Asia. I never understood why. So when I landed in Malaysia, I could have the best Chinese cuisine, best Thai cuisine, the best Malaysian cuisine, and Indian cuisine, and so on. So it was a mix and match, a blend of all Asia into one place. And I remember waking up one day, first morning, 8 a.m., went to the market, and was searching for breakfast. So I started tooting around. I saw noodles, I saw fish, I saw meat, I saw spices. And I asked, where is breakfast? And one guy comes to me and said, breakfast? It's called food.
Yeah.
And you can have food any time of the day. And from that day, I believe lots of things changed into my mind. Why not eat a burger for breakfast? And why not eat rice for breakfast, which they do?
Absolutely.
So food in different parts of the world is just food. But after definitely 5-6 days of eating Malaysian cuisine and all the food of Asia, you would always go back to, I need simplicity. I need my labneh. I need my manoushi. I need that little tiny thing. And this is an episode of its own, where our food, back to probably Levantine cuisine, is something very simple and clear. Rarely you would find all around Asia, talking about that part of Malaysia, food with no spices, or food that is not stir-fried, or food that has no oil, and food that has... So at the end of it, fifth day, you would say, okay, wait, simple labneh, halloumi, just a little piece.
The Mediterranean diet.
Exactly.
Yeah, simplicity about the ingredient.
So Mediterranean diet is the next thing. Let me tell them about our encounter. So you followed me for a long time.
Yes, I did.
Very, very long time. Lebanon, the villages, you're going to tell me about that. Oh, I never asked you, when did you start? And I heard of you in Dubai, common friends, lots of common friends. And you definitely stood out of being different. You have your own style, your own way of filming. Making a name for yourself for a couple of years now as the Bedouin foodie, probably different age than the young generation with a phone and the food bloggers around. And I said, this guy probably we need to meet. We met 5 minutes in the meeting, less. And I said, come on.
We knew we could do something.
We're doing a show together.
Yeah.
Probably we didn't think of going to a restaurant yet. We didn't think of doing the great sandwich or best foods in town. But I felt that we could connect in a different way, in a higher level, where sharing knowledge, content, trips and travels, and this is why we're here today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me ask you a little bit about you.
Yeah, sure.
Let's set the record straight.
Yeah.
Do you eat garlic and onion or not?
I avoid as much as I can. I would not eat garlic and onion. I cannot eat garlic and onion. It hurts me so much.
Yeah.
But sometimes, unfortunately, it just passed through.
Yeah.
And for the last, giving you an example, for the last 4 days, I've been eating garlic and onion.
Yeah.
And I discovered it when I arrive home. So when I reach the night, I discovered, I see my body failing me. I would feel bloated. I would have red under my eyes. So it really kills me on the inside. Sometimes, I don't know. I avoid as much as I can. I would never eat a tofu sandwich. I would never eat a chicken shawarma.
Although the Lebanese tomb is so famous now. You know, that's going around the world now too.
Yeah, it is.
There are companies that are making it and selling it in the supermarket.
It is.
Under the name of tofu.
It is. I'll tell you a story.
Yeah.
When I first met, I was at the opening of Malik Tofu in Paris.
Yeah.
And back then, they decided in Paris to do a lower version or an adapted version of tomb. So 60-70% of customers came in, non-Lebanese, and asked for more garlic. So they decided back then that, okay, wait, let's do the normal garlic. And
yeah,
it's rocking it. Yeah. Fast forward, I was at the opening of Malik Tofu in Montreal. Doing great. Thousands of sandwiches sold every day. And it's all about that tomb. Definitely Lebanese, Arabs, Mediterranean's,
yes,
but lots of Canadians and Americans that go in and say, we want this white sauce of yours.
The white sauce, absolutely. And it's called white sauce.
It's
incredible. You know, have you noticed that people have become more foodies in general as the years progress? Like, I remember a time, oh man, no, I don't want any garlic in my sandwich or this. Now, like you said, they're coming in, they're asking even for even more garlic.
I believe we can set the world and shape it as before Instagram and after Instagram. So for me, the food world is Instagram changed. Let me tell you a story. 2012, I go to a restaurant, started writing reviews, and one restaurateur sends me out and says, remove your phone from your hand. You're not allowed to take pictures of my plates. You're not allowed to take pictures of my menu. You're stealing it. And this is the word he used.
Wow.
You're stealing it. I'm tisrqon. Said, man, come on. I'm putting it online. It's an advertisement for you. Said, I don't care. Remove your phone from your hand or decide to leave. And I was so enraged. It was, okay, wait. I wrote the review, etc. I'll skip that part. 5 years later, that same guy, different restaurant, same owner, different restaurant, he calls me and says, why didn't you visit me yet? Come on.
Come and give me some coverage.
Exactly. So back then, 2020, Instagram was created in 2012, if I remember well. Nobody took pictures of food. Why would you take pictures of food? The restaurant was all about eating it. So the experiences were, let's say Michelin never puts pictures of food. It was the chef and the star.
Absolutely.
Instagram came in where people started taking pictures of food, wanting to understand food, wanting to try food, feeling excited about food. And this is why, answering your question, yes, people are becoming more and more foodie, understanding what they eat and being more picky, because the cousin is eating, or the friend has a picture, or the wife went somewhere. So it became that community of, and I know lots of people, and restaurateur tell me, customers come in with a print screen of a picture I've posted on Instagram and say, we want this.
Yes.
We want
yes.
this. And this is how the world has evolved.
Yeah. This is actually the reason I started my account. And I created this Bedouin foodie thing. It's because, if you remember the early days of Instagram, people started making fun of other people who post pictures of their food. It was a thing for a while. So I said, you know what? I'm going to make my own account, another account. And I created this brand, you want to call it brand, or this person, my alter ego, Bedouin Foodie. Bedouin because I wanted to show that I was an Arab person. I've always traveled around. I've moved and I kept moving around, living in different parts of the world. So I was kind of like a Bedouin, and I'm a foodie. So I wanted to combine that and that's how it started. And I started basically documenting and learning and writing it. And people started coming along for the journey. So I think you briefly mentioned it. I mean, the people they're following people like you or like me, or there are many of others, and they're learning. There's a learning process in it. And that gives me pleasure when I see people following and reading and actually learning along with me. I never say I know everything. I learn new things all the time. Things that, like the word umami, for example. I talked about it the other day. I didn't know what it was. Everybody was using umami. So, you know, you go out of your way, you learn, you ask, you research, you look it up on ChatGPT. No more Google now, it's ChatGPT. And so I communicate it. And I always communicate. There's nothing wrong with not knowing something. Every one of us had to learn it for a first time somewhere. And that's, you know, I follow you, I learned so much, especially about the little villages in Lebanon and all the regional cuisines and everything like that. So that's, I think it's an important thing.
How do you do it? Tell us how do you do it? So every single foodie has a different way. Yeah. Some put 10 pictures, some put 1 minute video, some like reels, some like nice pictures, good lighting. Some write a big long description of what did I feel, what did I eat. And some just put a hashtag and say, okay, this is the picture. How do you see yourself, or how is your model, I would say?
Sure. So I have OCD. And I'm obsessed. I obsess with things. To do what we do, you have to be obsessed with food. It's not a passion. It's one thing more. So in a way, that helped me in what I'm doing. So now I'll spend hours working on my photos, researching the subject, the chef, the dish, the ingredients. And that's my model. I like to have a very good visual, whether it's a photo. Video, I'm still learning how to do. The algorithm of Instagram asks for reels. But I spend a lot of time on my photos, on my details. I always have my portable light with me, so I could take really crisp photos. I like to describe in detail, but I have this theory that people don't like to read. People, you know, don't like to read. So I do it very brief. And I'll put multiple pictures. Instagram used to allow only 10, now they allow 20. And I know I should be doing more reels. And it's all about podcasts now. So this is also a very good thing.
I have a very important question.
Yeah.
Many foodies, so-called foodies, would consider themselves good foodies.
Yeah.
And would say, let people follow us. And the word follow is very, very, it's something. So asking someone to follow me, so follow my way, follow the way I write. So is anyone a foodie? One. Two, when do you reach a point where you really can say, I am a foodie? And back to you, after lots of trips, and definitely thousands of restaurants, hundreds, thousands, whatever, after lots of discoveries, lots of interviews, lots of connections, you reached the point where you said, now I can consider myself a foodie. And you're saying around the world, around Dubai, around anywhere we are, anyone buying an iPhone and saying, I am a foodie, follow me, I post sure. pictures. Tell me about your philosophy in that thing I just said.
Yes.
When do you say, now yes, I am, very proudly, I am a foodie, I am an influencer, I am whatever name today is. And how much time do you need to build up that?
Yeah, well, it's important, I think, to make a differentiate between an influencer and a foodie. They're two separate things. But when you're a foodie, you basically have a very developed palate. You have to know what a dish is supposed to taste like. And you have to know the difference between authentic and modernized. It's a learning process that takes years to develop. You have to know when you taste something, you're like, no, this is not right. It's missing lemon, it's missing this. So when you reach that level, you can say that I'm a foodie, and then you can start doing what I do, which is explaining and teaching. And what I say is I like to be an honest communicator. That's basically what I am, an honest communicator. And I'll put my spin on it or my thinking on it. But the most important thing is to have the developed palate, in my opinion.
Okay, so back to today is an episode about us, definitely you more than me. 30,000 followers plus or minus in the making, yeah. And one day this year you decided that I want to be a full timer.
That's right. I made the switch this year.
How you woke up and said enough? I want to give it all my time.
Okay, so
and definitely you're not doing it for the money.
Yeah. So let's be honest and put it on the table. Doing what I do, I get asked on a daily basis. Come to the restaurant, and we'll invite you for dinner, and we want you. It's insinuated that I would then post about it, but I refuse probably 95% of all invitations, because I never want to feel obligated to post. So I spent 8 years, that's how long I've been doing this, building the brand and building a following of people who trust me. And that's really important to me. But this year, I decided I want to do this professionally. Actually, it started last year. I want to do it professionally. I want to make a living out of my obsession for food. And the first offer I got, and which I accepted, was to help curate a food market, which is being developed here in Dubai. That's the first thing I do for money. So then now I'm trying to transition, and I want to find a way to make a living out of this, but keep my integrity and not say this is good if it's not good. It's a fine line to walk, to so to speak. I know you do it because everything you've covered is good. So I don't know, there's a secret to it. I don't know, I have to figure it out. But my ultimate goal is to transition from corporate life, which my corporate life is in luxury goods business, retail and distribution, to doing this full time.
It's gonna happen.
So yeah, let's see. My dream, and we spoke about this before, is to have a show on Netflix, you know, or like Anthony Bourdain or things like that. A lot of us probably share that same dream.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So we talked about Saudi, we talked about the Syrian origins, yes. We talked about the Palestinian origins,
yeah.
But we didn't talk about Dubai. So how did you land in this country, and
okay.
How do you identify in this country, and how does this country identify to you?
Sure. I remember I told you I left when I was 36 to do my own thing. And then that run ended and I had to rejoin my family business. So I called up my brother and I said, you know, I need a job. I need to come back and work. And so we agreed that I would come back here. Our business is regional, most of it in Saudi, UAE, and a little bit in Bahrain. So we decided collectively that I would move here. So I moved here 14 years ago. My job was to do business development for our group. And at the time we were doing just perfumes and cosmetics, and we wanted to transition into more luxury goods, jewelry and fashion. So that's what kind of like what I was doing. I moved here. It was 14 years ago, so 2007 probably. And I had lived here in the 90s previously, before I took off. Mm-hmm. So I knew Dubai. I witnessed in the past 14 years the growth, especially the growth of the food scene. I always describe Dubai as, I've been describing it as, it's a gold mine of, I used to call it ethnic foods, and one of the people who follow me said, he's like, listen, we don't like being called ethnic foods. So I changed it to regional foods. I call them regional foods. There are not many cities in the world that are like Dubai that have the depth of regional foods. It's literally incredible here. This is where the real gold of Dubai is, the real treasure. It's in the fact that you can have North Indian, Southern, East, or West Indian food in one place within 10 minutes drive from each other. You can have Iranian food, Iraqi, Palestinian, even regional Lebanese, you know, this person makes this kind of food. There aren't many places in the world like that. So that's my true love for Dubai, is in that sector. Although we have beautiful high-end restaurants, but I much prefer the street foods and the regional foods.
I'll put this as a mise en bouche for the Dubai episode. We'll keep it for later.
Yeah.
Because Dubai deserves it for 38 minutes, definitely.
Oh, definitely.
Why Dubai? Is it a food destination or not?
Absolutely.
When people say, you definitely would have better food in Italy or in France or in the States, would you agree on that or not? We'll keep it for the next episode.
Yes. So I have a lot to say about that.
Same here. So accordingly, to set up the tone for the next probably episodes without putting a number, imagine I'm a consultant, and I'm a company owner, and I come to you and say, I want you to consult for me.
Okay.
What do you know about food? So what would people expect in the next episodes? What do you consider yourself knowing about food, and how deep did you go into the food culture?
Okay. I'll answer the latter part. I went very deep, very deep. Being a lover of food, by default, a lot of my friends are restaurant owners and bar owners and, you know, in the hospitality business. I know the business of it, the back end of it, and I know how difficult that is. That's probably the most difficult thing, running the actual restaurant, not worrying about theft, food cost, suppliers, supply chain. this is another episode. but I really go deep in it. I don't want to say I can tell if a restaurant's going to work or not, but I know what not to do. And sometimes that's more important than knowing what you want to do. You know, does that make sense?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Okay. No, knowing what not to do,
yeah,
it will save you a lot of heartache,
mm-hmm,
and money.
Yeah.
So Dubai, again, it's a Dubai episode. We'll discuss Dubai. It's famous for having flashy, glitzy, beautiful resorts and hotels and restaurants, everything. But it's that other side where the real magic is. And that needs to be communicated better. People need to go and try it for themselves.
It's a beautiful way of developing that question that says, why do restaurants work and some other fail?
Yes.
What is the secret of restaurants working or not? Is it only marketing? Is it not doing the things you should not do?
Yeah.
Because we always focus on, I need to do. So you put a checklist and say, marketing done, invitation done, opening done, employment done,
yeah,
good food probably, and then nobody comes in.
Yeah. Did the restaurant do a research properly? Do they have a business plan? Is the location, they have these locations that they always say nothing will ever work here.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple here, and nothing has worked there. But on paper, if you're an executive, a restaurant executive based in London, you're going to be like, oh, this space is available. It's in DIFC. Oh, it means it's going to work. DIFC, for people who don't know, is the financial district in Dubai, where a lot of the high-end restaurants are. And a lot of the highest grossing restaurants are there. But not every location in DIFC works. And not every building in DIFC is going to work. So if you don't know and you're sitting in London and they tell you, yeah, we found a 2,000 square foot location in DIFC, you're going to jump on it. But you do your research properly, you'll know that not all locations are born equal or whatever. There's something there. Like,
what's the food you would never eat?
Food I would never eat? I don't like sweet food. I like cake, things like that, but I don't love it. I'm more of a savory person. So sweet, like sweet and sour, anything, I don't like. I also don't like internal organs. Any hawashi, they call it,
yeah,
in Arabic.
Like
all that stuff. I've eaten it before. I know I don't like it. I like foie gras though.
Yeah.
So maybe I do eat some. How about you? Do you have, besides garlic and onion?
So I would never eat garlic and onion. I'm not sure I wouldn't eat anything else.
Yeah.
I'm all in on everything. I would avoid spicy things, which I believe don't add
value. I love
value.
Spice. So good. We complement each other there.
Because when you end up eating all day long for the last 12 years of your life,
yep,
you know what's good for you and what's not good for you. You know what's good for you, what you enjoy at the moment, and what you wouldn't enjoy the next morning
yes,
or the same night.
I know what you mean.
And this is definitely garlic and onion, one
yep,
of them. So in what would I eat? Anything.
Yeah.
Exactly like you, I like harsh things, not sweet. I like the
yep,
salty things, very savory
yep,
thing, very acidic things.
Yeah,
so I'm
exactly,
more
that's
on
me,
the real intense flavors that probably some would say too much.
Yeah.
I would like my tabbouleh very intense, very lemony, very acidic. Very.
I'm exactly the same.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the sweet, I never understood why would you put sugar in food. So I would eat a manouche that is, when I say sweet, people don't even know it is, but I can taste the sugar in it and I can taste the milk in it. And in this world, probably many don't know, I would say up to 60 or 70% of manaish have milk and sugar that is covered in. This is why
it's always
fluffy. This is why it's always deliverable. So a few minutes ago, I told you about food before Instagram and food after Instagram. And then something we don't talk about much, and this is an episode of its own, food before COVID and food after COVID. So food before COVID was, this food is good. Food after COVID is, this food is good after 30 minutes.
Mm.
So because life changed to the 30 minute thing.
Yeah, the delivery.
And in Lebanon,
in
Dubai actually now, more than 15,000 cloud kitchens are selling their food.
Incredible.
So is it immediately a good shawarma? Yeah, definitely. Is it still good after 15 minutes? So back to the manouche. Is the manouche still good after 15 minutes? Impossible. If you do not put, in most of the cases, sugar and milk into it, after 30 minutes, you would have something very hard, very dry and very hard to eat. So this hidden thing where people think it's probably a vegan item or a vegetarian item,
it'll affect the taste.
Exactly.
Going back to the authenticity thing.
But some items are hidden here and there. And look at any ingredient you see on American shelves. It's impossible, it's illogical to have 15 lines of ingredients.
Yes.
When you look at it and say, okay, it's flour and water.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's something to go back to when you realize you're a foodie, is when you realize that the fewer ingredients, the better the dish.
Mm-hmm. You know? And this is what makes Levantine cuisine or Mediterranean cuisine.
Yes.
It's not about how many ingredients and how much time. You can do just a simple hummus, four ingredients. You can do just simple labneh, one ingredient.
And this is how, where someone like who does what you do, it comes in important. You can tell and teach us what an authentic manouche is supposed to taste like. Maybe someone's never been to Lebanon and doesn't really realize that they add all these additives. I don't want to make it sound like everybody adds additives or anything, but there is an authentic taste and an unauthentic taste. And it's important to find someone who can help you navigate that.
I will tell you about something few people will understand or even believe in, and definitely will connect in a way or another. I strongly believe in energies, which I would call nafas.
Yes.
An amazing good manouche, authentic manouche, since you asked, has 40% of it energy. Said what? Energy? Wait, it's all about ingredients. You can do any manouche. Wear gloves, you've lost half it. Use bad water, salty water, you've lost half it. You didn't feel it. You didn't put your energy into it. You didn't put your love into it. You don't understand what you're doing. You didn't taste it in your childhood. And it's just fast forward of being any other ingredient.
Yeah.
You lost the other half. So accordingly, it's definitely a very good flour. It's definitely very good water. Yes, water has a big, 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 big part of everything we eat. Why Scotland has the best whiskey? Because of the water. Why Lebanon has the best harab? Because of the water. Why Lebanon has the best manouche? Because of the water. So water, ashta in Lebanon tastes different than ashta here. There are good things. But go back, rewind, water is important. And water in this country, which we're having in bottled water, passes through different processes to make it drinkable.
Yes.
So this is important, water. Good flour. Not the pizza flour and not any flour. It literally needs a good flour with the appropriate amount of protein in it. Salt, definitely. Yeast, and what kind of yeast? Is it natural yeast, sourdough? Is it powdered yeast or is it liquid yeast? And then some of the yeast would need half a spoon of sugar, half little, tiny little. And this is the authentic way of doing a manouche.
And we haven't even gotten to the topic.
Yes,
the olive oil and
we didn't.
This
even
is
talk
you're
about
just talking about the base.
I can do an episode about manouche. Yeah. I can tell you. I can give you an episode. We can do an episode about how different kinds of manouche. So back to the original thing we're talking about and why we're having this show is to talk about food, understanding food.
Yes.
Food is not something you eat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. If it's not good, don't eat it. If it's not the best you've ever had, it's not just time for it.
Yeah.
And understanding and having good food would just give you a step back on life and understanding that food is everywhere.
Absolutely.
But you're not here to live forever. So since you have a very short time on this life, appreciate every moment of it. So there are people who just roll a sandwich, go in the car and just eat because it's time for it to eat because they're going to work.
Yeah.
No, take a step back, wake up 15 minutes earlier, which I do every single day, half an hour earlier, to enjoy my coffee and not have it in the car, to enjoy my bite and not have it in the car, and close my eyes and feel that every single ingredient of the thing. So this is food philosophy for me. So being a foodie or understanding food is not about good restaurant, bad restaurant. Is okay, good, wait, we like it, let's say. But why do we like it? Who are working in the kitchen? How much energy and nafas in the Arabic language is there? Are the ingredients imported or not? Do they put preservatives or not? Is it still good after 30 minutes? So is it natural, et cetera, et cetera? And lots of questions you can ask every single minute without even having to discuss them. And as you said, people do not write. So imagine a post when I say, okay, I love it. Many would say, he loves everything. No, I really love it.
Yeah.
But if I write a 5-sentence paragraph or 10-sentence paragraph, you would not even read it. Sometimes I say, I love this food, call this number, this is the location.
Yeah.
And what are the comments? You didn't give us the location. because people expect to hear it.
Yes.
And not even read it. On a YouTube video and now...
Oh, you mean in the video? Then?
Yes.
Oh,
okay, okay. So now, in our video, in the description below, there are going to be your Instagram and my Instagram and what did we talk about, etc.
Yeah.
And yet we're going to have messages saying, with all due respect to people watching, you didn't give us the Instagram of Bedouin Foodie. So please give them your Instagram.
Yeah, it's at Bedouin Foodie. Bedouin Foodie, one word. My Instagram is at Bedouin Foodie. Bedouin Foodie in one word, connected. I wanted to go back to, you were talking about how things deliver and not deliver. I know it's another episode, but I have a thing up for pizza. I'm a pizza fanatic. Mm-hmm. And New Yorkers say they make the best pizza because of the water. So it's interesting. It goes back. They say we have the best water. That's why our pizza is the best.
I've had the chance to travel to Italy for 8 days and tour all around Italy for pizza. And I've met the biggest guys in the pizza, the top three best Italian pizzaiolos in the world.
Yeah.
Pepe and Granny.
Pepe and Granny
has won 4 times.
He's a legend.
And I had the chance to spend 2 hours with him, even though he doesn't speak English and doesn't understand my language, but we could connect in a million ways. And what did I learn from him?
Yeah.
That's an episode of its own. And then fast forward, I've been all around. I've been to Lebanon with one of the best pizzaiolos ever. And if you compare pizza in Italy and pizza with this guy in Lebanon, which we'll talk about later on one day, is okay, wait. You don't have to be Italian to do the best pizza. And I can prove that some of the greatest food I've had, Lebanese food in kitchens. And I ask, who's the chef? And the chef was not Lebanese.
Yeah.
And this is an episode of its own. Should you be a chef from your original kitchen to understand your food or not?
Absolutely.
And that we'll talk about foodie cities and so on and
so
forth.
I can't wait to have that discussion because I have a lot to say about that.
Beautiful. And then America, et cetera, et cetera. So pizzas come in several different ways, several different categories, thick, prepared half an hour earlier, prepared 72 hours earlier, and not all pizzas are Napolitana, prepared 72 hours earlier. So we'll talk about it, but the very important part, which to finish our morning discussion, water is very important.
Water is life.
Water is life, is what you drink. Salt in your body is what you drink. Yeah. What kind of water and what do you feel? Water with minerals, without minerals. Can you drink purified water for life? No, you will die. Mm-hmm. Fluoride in water and not. So water. We would have to stop because we have reached
already?
Our 38 minutes. So
that
this was our first episode. I hope you liked it. I'm focusing on English when some of the words go out in Arabic, and this is why I sometimes I'm not finding my words, but it's going to get better and better episode after the next. See you on our next episode, weekly agenda of amazing discussions. And please leave us your comments, subscribe, and we'll get back to you with all answers.
And follow our Instagram accounts.
Follow our Instagram accounts! NoGarlicOnions.com and Bedouin Foodie.